Welcome back to Inspire Change with Jordan Mulligan, and what a year it's been. We had some incredible guests over the last 12 months, from Master Shahung Yi, to Ollie Ollerton, to Tulam, to Billy Billingham. There's just been some incredible guests of the show, and that's why today I wanted to take a step back and bring you some of my favorite moments and the most inspiring moments of 2023. Today's video was sponsored by Huel, a quick, affordable, nutritionally complete source of food with everything that your body needs. And they've just sent me their daily greens. I'll be trying these out later on. But if you want to find out more, head to the link in the description where you can get a discount. And let's dive into this amazing video with some of the greatest guests that we've had on the Mulligan Brothers podcast. Let's dive into it.
People want to know how to stop overthinking. How do they stop overthinking or ruminating on things?
The easy answer would right now be learn how to meditate, okay? But to really bring it into perspective right now, overthinking is either something inside of the mind is fluctuating all the time. There is too much input available and it's jumping from one to another. So in a way, there is that type of restlessness of the mind. It's continuously jumping, which means it's too much. So you're thinking about too many different things. This is one type of overthinking. Overthinking can also mean you only have one thing that is like keeping you busy, but you are turning it over and over again and never come to any type of conclusion. It's also a type of overthinking related to, let's say, one subject. So these are now simplified, the two problematic states. Problematic if you don't have the ability to switch it off, if you want to switch it off. Yeah, if you have the ability to regulate this about yourself. So when you want to be focused, you can be focused. When you want to dream, you can dream. If you want to make your brainstorming, you can open up for brainstorming. If this is the range of adjustment you have about yourself, then it's not a problem. A problem is if you need to stay focused, but then you're shattered. These are the moments when it makes sense to learn methods, how to avoid that, or how to really focus when you need focus. Now, I wouldn't say that the right approach would be to state that focus is the only right way. No, we have focus in this life, which means there is something, there's a limited type of view you're putting yourself in, because this limited type of view is like it's the collection of awareness. It's the collection, the summary of intention into a specific spot that you want right now to make it grow faster or to develop faster. That's why we need focus, that all the energy is bundled into that one focus point. So you want to push something forward, you need focus. But how, amongst all this variety of options that we humans sometimes have, how do you know on what should I focus? Should I focus on the social media? Should I focus on my family? Should I focus on that number, business number one? Or should I focus on business number two? Should I focus on wife number one or wife number two? Yeah, there's so many different options. And therefore, what you need is overview sometimes about your life. Overview. The wide view, the wide angle is different than focus. The focus is, I only watch you. I'm focused. But the more I get into that limited view, the more I will forget about she's sitting there, there's your brother, there are your friends. So what needs to be learned and is able to be developed is you have both sometimes at the same time. I know who is sitting where. But at the same time, I also know in which direction I'm pointing my words to. So that means on the one side, there is something open at this moment in time, but at the same time also, you have something focused. And to have and learn the ability to access this, let's say with your mind, to train your mind that he is always like in this category, because it's like you're driving the car. Of course, it matters what you're doing in regards to the steering. So it's like the direct focused interaction. Yeah, but only in interplay with all the other drivers on the street. So what is now more important, to focus on the others or to focus on your driving? Both of it at the same time. Only this focus and the openness at the same time. This is what means yin and yang cannot be separated. But in order to get there, sometimes it's necessary to individually, separately practice, okay, this now is a focused state, and this one right now is an open state. Yeah? To be very clear and be able to distinguish for yourself. Okay, this is the focus. It feels like this. This is the open. It feels like that. And now comes the magic about it, how to combine both into the same time. Yes, and this is something everybody will need to figure out. This is when the magic happens and you are stopping from the separation of either that or that into it's both of it at the same time. Yeah. And now in regards to this overthinking, so what is it that people, for example, are able to practice? There I can suggest, for example, you are choosing one object, which can be in a lot of cases an object that we call that is your meditation object. It can be the breath, for example. So instead of following up what comes into your mind, which means if you have too many thoughts, we turn it around. You are deciding what you are going to put onto your mind for the next 5 minutes. Whatever it is, whatever you choose, this is your so-called meditation object. So that means I am telling myself, okay, for the next 5 minutes, I am going to only place my attention, my mind, on the breath. So I feel how the breath enters into my body, and I also feel how it is coming out of my body. This is when you use the breath, for example. Yeah. Other people, if they find it too hard still, you can use this type of movement. So what is your meditation object is now, let's say, the movement. It's the movement itself, the up movement, the down movement. But the focus is there. So this is a way of what we call mindful. You are mindful of what you do. Your mind is full of something. Yeah, full of what? Full of what you have put into it. That's why then you call it mindful practice. I know exactly where I put my hands. I make it slow. It doesn't really matter what type of movement it is. It is only as long as I do it, I know what I do. So I don't leave, let's say, these movements right now to coincidence. No, you learn for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, to take something in full responsibility and awareness of what you are able to concentrate on. And this is a so-called, we sometimes also call them mind exercising or mind development practices. Because it's not about the movement itself. To just do this movement, it's not going to bring you too much benefit, let's say, physically. Right now, not yet. But this is, yeah, this slow movement and all of that, that is there for you to, first of all, learn to focus the mind. Learn to focus the mind. This number one. And afterwards, after you realize, okay, actually right now, I can feel that in the moment where I start to have conversations with people, you know when you are present or not. Yeah, you are starting to feel that, okay, now my awareness is not with you, it's gone. No? And then you feel, what is the difference between now I'm mindful, now I'm not mindful. Because this ability to distinguish is therefore so essential, because if there is something that we humans can do about our life, then it can only be done while you are mindful. If you don't know you have a problem, you can't solve it. And that's it. So the whole point of why is there so much this emphasis on mindfulness? Yeah, why should I know what I do? Because if you don't know what you do, your life is a coincidence. And that's not what it's supposed to be. It is supposed to be what you put onto your mind, what you want to see yourself, the way how you want to see yourself, what you want to achieve in this lifetime. It should be possible. But only if with the allowance of what has been given into your own hands, if you also use this chance. And like I said in our first, in the first time that we were meeting, I strongly think and believe that we all have something that comes from us that we have in our hands. And if that potential that we have in our hands is merged with our awareness and with our action, and then at the same time also is combined with the will of God or the will of the destiny or destiny itself, then it's going to happen. But if you put something onto the mind which is not in harmony with the will of the nature, with the will of God, with the destiny, you can try as much as you want. It's not going to happen. So, what is this discovery once again about? Discover your place in this hugeness and submit. But submit doesn't mean it's bad. It means that it's it's incredible that something like this exists. This is the submission. Submission, it's not in terms of you give up. No. It's not you give up life. No, you finally allow the fullness of life to flow through you. This is called submission. So you can always understand these wordings in different ways. But the one I'm talking about right now is allow life to run through you. You can express it in terms of what happens, happens for a reason. Yeah? If something happens, and this is why it's so important, that acknowledgement. Because acknowledgement is the first step of understanding all of what we go through belongs to the process. And what is this process? For example, every human in this world, I think, is going to different stages of challenges, let's call them like this. These challenges can be, for example, let's just take one, loss, losing something. There was a time when we all were still small child, and when somebody took something away from you, maybe some of us were already crying, because already very young you felt what losing means, to lose something that actually you like. Now then, teenager, 10 years later, somebody took again something away from you, same feeling. Nowadays, somebody takes something away that you strongly feel like it belongs to you, the same feeling comes up. So what I'm saying is, throughout all the decades, the feeling of loss, it's always the same. The situations, the circumstances, they change. Why that feeling comes up? But the point is, it's the same. The feeling of loss is the feeling of loss. If you're angry about your car gets scratched, or you're angry about you lost something, or you're angry about somebody took something from you, the angriness is also the same. If you're jealous, you're jealous. There are not 50 different types of jealousy. There are 50 different reasons why you become jealous. But the jealousy is the same. The angriness is the same. The loss is the same. The hate is the same. The joy is the same. The happiness, it's the same. And so what I think is going, what I think is happening, is that each human being is confronted with loss. And now the question is, how are you individually dealing with that now? And as long as you have not found a solution to deal with loss, losing is going to be part of the challenges you will face over and over and over again. Once you have managed and found a solution in regards to loss, there will be things coming up that make you angry, because your next challenge is overcome angriness. Small things make you angry, big things make you angry. It's always the same angriness until you found a solution. No, the anger cannot manage me. It must be the other way around. Anger solved. Then comes the next one. Question of life and death, of fear. Until you have solved the answer for yourself, how to deal with fear. And why I'm now pretty convinced to state the things like this is because there is so much similarity to the way and the reasons why we have this type of hardening methods coming from the Shaolin Kung Fu training. Hardening meaning, like you saw also before from Shifu Yanlei when he was hitting himself, we have many tools inside that you can use to get in touch with pain. We necessarily take into consideration that this is going to happen. We know when you start touching that, when you start doing these methods, the pain is going to come. We want it to come. Why? Because now you can go in. Now you can really go in and on the go, in the present moment, that is the special part about it, in the present moment, you figure out the way how to release it. And there is that saying, when you have went over, when you have overcome a certain level of pain, overcome means it's never going to come again. It's finished. You walk through that level of pain one time. The next pain you will feel is a different one. It's not the same anymore. So there is a difference between something shows up in your lifetime and you are ignoring it, you are avoiding it, you're trying to run away from it, and you face it. You face the anger, you face the fear, you face the jealousy, you face the pain, you face what you don't like, You face the fact that you are out of your comfort zone. Why? Because you know that once you have overcome it and find a solution for it, it's solved for this lifetime. And this is my suggestion, to view these methods sometimes to make yourself life, there's that nice saying, yeah, life is not going to get easier. It's just that your mind and your body become more resistant, more strong. Same situation, more relaxed. Why? Because you finally start to find a solution that is within your reach, within your hands. And I think the great part for me personally, why I'm still after so many years like this approach about the physical practice combined with the spiritual mental development like in the Shaolin Temple, is because there are many institutions, many philosophies that talk about overcoming the suffering, ending the suffering. But end the suffering. But overcome the suffering, that gives now for me perspective. Overcome the suffering means it's going to be there. You're going to lose your mother. You're going to lose your father. You're going to lose animals and humans that you love. It's going to happen. You're going to lose money. And at the same time, people are also going to hurt you, even though you don't even know what you did wrong. Things like this are going to happen in this lifetime. To wait for better times to come where the world will be completely in peace and you can walk peacefully over the street, never having the fear that somebody's going to come and do something to you. It's not going to happen. Because the world is just the way as it is. But knowing this, preparing yourself, learning the right ways or useful ways that are developing yourself physically and mentally to be able to walk through this lifetime, that's possible. That is something that is available to us. It's just you need to get rid of those fantasies that better times are going to come. If we don't create the better times, nothing's going to happen.
I think personally, just for the fact of lead with your actions, you know, we say actions speak louder than words. But I think in combination, like you have to have the action. Social media today, everybody can speak.
Everybody can talk.
Yeah. But no actions.
That's what I say. Talk is good. I also do this. Talk is good. Blah, 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 blah. Talk too much make people tired.
Yeah.
Show me how much you love me. Show me how much you can do. Demonstrate. You're speaking beautiful.
Yeah.
Let me see how much you can do. Be honest with yourself. That's what I can represent a Shaolin Temple. That's what I try to explain to you. I can explain to you right now. Shaolin Temple martial arts, only, for example, a few firms. In the Chinese martial arts area, in Chinese culture, they draw a line. Shaolin Temple martial arts is external. They draw a line. Wu Tang martial arts is internal. Yes, for example, Tai Chi. For example, Tai Chi Chuan. Internal. Yeah. Xing Yi. Yeah, Ba Gua. They draw a line. You talk about internal, external, I have it. You talk about different kind of flavors, variety, kind of mushroom right here. I describe myself. Life, dictionary of martial arts. I have it.
You talk about the as a child, you know, the discipline that your parents gave you, that your masters gave you. And today, you're right, some people would call it abuse. But I personally see it as extremely important. It's why I think athletes thrive after, you know, their careers, you know, because they've had to have discipline to become a great athlete. How important is it to have that in your life, to have structure and discipline?
Discipline is the most important thing in our lives, in a human life. Doesn't matter if from United States, United Kingdom, China, Europe, Russia, South America, wherever you come from. Discipline is the most important thing in human life, in people's life. You have to discipline yourself. You don't discipline yourself, doesn't make sense. You not appreciate you have a great life. You not appreciate you have a precious life, life purpose. You appreciate your life right here, the purposely to live. Do something meaningful for yourself, for other people, for the world. That's why you're here. Appreciate. Yeah. That's what we take self-discipline. I'm tired. I don't want to get up to exercise my precious life. I'm tired. I don't want to go to study. I'm tired. I don't want to go to work. Call in. I'm not feeling well. Look, life has everything. Just like a weather. Cloudy, rainy, snow, windy, hot, cold. Life has everything. Understand that. Don't let that, this kind of like cold, hot, I don't feel good. Start to make excuses in life. When you start to make excuses all around you, like doom. you cannot go over it because you already built relationship with excuses. Excuses loves you, you love excuses. Go ahead. Continue to damage yourself. Yeah. Continue to destroy your life. Don't do that. I suggest everybody stand tall, be proud, appreciate, understand the purpose you're here. Yeah, do something meaningful for yourself.
Yeah.
Stay in front of the mirror. That's why I said mirror around you. 360 degrees, look at yourself. Why I treat myself like this? Why I treat myself like nothing? You know what I mean? Why I disrespect myself? Why I'm here, wasting my life. Don't do that. Stand tall, be proud, live life with purpose. In front of the mirror, look at yourself. Let me do something. Yeah, later on, you get out of here, go underground, leave. You turn your head, look at, I did good, my life. You feel good. Yeah, don't regret. Afterwards, 40 years later, 50 years later, why I left a life like that? Yeah, you slap your face, too late. You know what I mean? You ask yourself, too late. Yeah, from now, this moment.
Weather is a great example to say, it's cold, it's hot, it's snowy, it's rainy, I don't want to do it today. It's a great example. How do people find, and why should people find, a purpose and something meaningful, especially finding something meaningful for other people as well? Why should they find that?
Because already here, your life already here. You don't cherish yourself, even make heart, I give my heart to you. You don't take it. You have everything from you. You have to start understand, stand tall, look at yourself. You're here already. Life is choices. You choose to go left, you choose to go right. You choose to go up, you choose slide down your life. We don't go that way. We go up. Live life by to make wonderful examples, good examples for other people. Yeah. For other people, to help other people. And to help other people to make this world a better place. This world needs help. We see now, in the 21st century, you see now, in the 21st century, around the world, you see how many homeless, how many poor people, how many people misunderstanding, how many people disconnecting, we need to bridge them together. We need to, you know, live life purposely to make wonderful examples. Yeah. To encourage other people, to help other people, to speak out. Let people hear your voice. Yeah, give a heart to other people.
I have just received the Huel Daily Greens, and this is going to be my first time trying it. One scoop goes in. And I've been seeing this product everywhere, and I've wanted to try it for a long time. 91 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced nutrients, adaptogens, super greens, and fruit complex mushroom blend, dairy-free probiotics, antioxidants. Now, I love Huel because I think they're absolutely amazing. All their products are. So I know that this will be great, but the reason I wanted to try this is because a lot of the time, I don't get enough time to get in all those things that are in there. And this is how I will now do it every morning, that quickly, 10 seconds. Ooh, I was expecting it to taste really manky, but that's really good. And it tastes healthy as well, so I really feel like I'm getting my health out of that. If you want to find out more about their daily greens, one of the most convenient products, I think, with all of that in there, you can go to the link in the description where you can get a discount code. I want to say a massive thank you to Huel for supporting us. They are supporting our physical endeavors, our podcast, our business, because the thing that is so precious about the Huel product for me is the time that it saves. The amount of time that you can waste throughout a day is incredible. And with food and nutrition planning, it is very difficult. So to know that you can do this and have everything that you need in one scoop is absolutely mind-blowing for me. So head to the link down below.
One of the things that comes up constantly with questions of our audience, especially on Instagram, asking us how to deal with anxiety, fear as well. And, you know, I would love to go through that. Chapter 16 is fear and anxiety, the enemies within. I'd love to hear some more on it.
So fear and anxiety are one of those enemies that are invisible because they're not loud and they don't have weapons, but the effect every one of us knows, the effect of fear. Fear causes us to retreat. It weakens us. It paralyzes us. The inability to make a decision, a commitment. You know, fears can be fears, real fears. It can be imagined fears. And especially in the area of the emotional, fear really plays an important role. Just to use maybe the most textbook classic example. If your parents did not have a good marriage, or they were fighting, or there was divorce, and there was a lot of acrimony, a lot of anger, you're going to be afraid to go into a relationship because you don't want something like that. How many people have told me, I don't want to get married because my parents had a very bad marriage. Some people don't want to have children because they were hurt as children. These are all fears driven by very legitimate reasons. The reason essentially is that I was hurt. It would be like, you know, someone who was bitten by a dog as a child. Every time they see a dog, they're going to be afraid. Like any trauma, we're afraid of these traumas because these traumas repeat themselves in our lives. So the challenge with fear and anxiety is, like I said, if someone came to you with a gun to your head, okay, that's an enemy. But fear doesn't come with a gun to your head. It just weakens you. And many people are even afraid to say they're afraid. So they make believe they're all tough and all that. Then the day, just a fearful child that is afraid to get into relationships. You know, today we have big issue, commitment issues. You date someone, everything seems to be working, then one of the people dating suddenly starts retreating, is afraid to move on. And they deny it. They say, no, I'm not afraid. The fact of the matter is because when you're emotionally vulnerable, you're exposed. And if you've been hurt, you don't want to be hurt again. You know, if your heart was broken by someone, you don't want it to be broken again. That's why it's so complicated to deal with fear because many of us are not even aware of our own fears. But I would say fear and insecurity is one of the most powerful driving forces in life that causes us to make either bad decisions or no decisions and causes us to really stagnate and not really move forward because, you know, better not take any risk. I knew someone that I used to always tell him, "You're a great guy. You're such a you'll be such a good husband. You'll be such a good father." Nah, I don't want to take the risk. So I said to him, the greatest risk is taking no risk. Recently, he got married. He got married in Costa Rica. I was there. And he told me at the wedding, he said to me, "I'll never forget what you told me. The greatest risk is taking no risk." And I realized, correct. And I decided to take a risk. And he's the happiest person today. So I think fear is one of those forces that that needs to be acknowledged. But at the same time, you don't fight fear with, again, with weapons. You fight fear with courage. You fight fear with things you believe in. So when I meet people who tell me that they're fearful, or I see they're experiencing it, I try to find what are you not fearful about? Let's find something that you're comfortable with, and let's start building upon that. Some value system, some belief system, something that you consider to be very strong in your life. There's a story, I think I tell it in the chapter on fear and anxiety. He was the teacher and father-in-law of my mentor, the Rebbe. He was called the previous Rebbe. So he was arrested in 1927 in the former Soviet Union by the Bolsheviks, who did everything possible to abolish religion and faith. And they saw him as a threat, what they called a counter-revolutionary, because it undermined the loyalty to the, I guess, to the Soviet regime. He was a man that was known for his indomitable spirit. You could not break him. And he writes in his diary, which he actually calls Tractate from Hell, because they tortured him. It was very tough. And he said one of the captors pointed a gun to his head and said, Rebbe, mind you, he said in Yiddish, because he was a Jew, but he was a secular one. And he said, "This gun has changed many people's minds. It's caused many people to cooperate." And the rabbi responded, his name was Rabbi Joseph Isaac Schneerson, that was his name. It's in 1927, in Stalinist Russia, Stalinist Soviet Union. And the rabbi said to him calmly, he said, "This toy," he referred to the pistol, to the gun as a toy, he said, "This toy can frighten someone who has one world and many gods, but not someone who has one god and many worlds." You know, we call it investments, they call it diversification. If you put all your eggs in one basket, so if someone takes away that basket, you're lost. But if you have many baskets and you've diversified, the rabbi wanted to live, but don't think you can frighten me because you're going to kill me, because something else will live on. My spirit will live on. I have my students. I have my legacy. Where someone who has only one world and many gods, once you take that world from them, that materialistic world, it's all over. In other words, the counterforce to fear is faith. Is some type of connection to something that the fear does not affect. And that allows you the power to rise above the concerns and fears. Because fear can be very debilitating. And that's essentially the theme of the chapters, how you connect to your deeper eternal wellsprings of your soul that allows you to forge ahead even when there's doubts and unknown uncertainties that can cause you to be fearful. It's essentially connecting to something higher that doesn't let you fall below, so your fears somewhat dissipate. And you'll see it again. All the people of courage that you will see, they all had something that was stronger that kept them going. They believed in it. I mean, let's be honest, which soldier, which military person wants to go fight? But if you're fighting for a cause that you think is important, you'll do that, because the cause gives you the strength to overcome your fears. And frankly, I mean, I'll just use the other extreme, even simple coaching, a tennis coach, a sports coach, when a top athlete gets into a funk, psychologically feels an injury or someone got to their head, what do you need? You need someone to give you the impetus and the energy to get over your own fears, fear of failure, fear of loss. So it's always finding a deeper strength that counters the fears in our lives.
The biggest risk is taking no risk at all. I've heard it before, but I'd love to hear a little bit more on it because I know our audience will really connect with that message.
So the biggest risk is taking no risk at all. You know, people think I'm going to stay on the fence and that way I play safe. Yeah, but you could also end up never accomplishing anything in life. So that's why it's the biggest risk. You end up not going anywhere. So of course, if you start using your mind, there are many reasons not to do things. And if you get stuck in your head, you could end up doing your whole life and never really fulfilling what you need to fulfill. One of the saddest poems out there is from Oliver Wendell Holmes. He wrote a poem called The Voiceless, where he writes, look, think of this tragic line. Alas, alas to those that die with their song still inside them. In other words, we all have a song inside us. And many of us are afraid to let sing, either because our parents or educators or society has pressured us to fit into their mold instead of our own. So you can live your whole life and never sing your song. That's the greatest risk of all. You've never been who you should have been. You never actualized your potential. So yes, is life filled with risk? There's no such thing as success without the possibility for failure. When your child begins to walk, that child will fall. Any parent that says, I don't want my child to fall, I'm not going to let that child walk, or I'll hold the child when they start walking, will never allow their child to walk. You have to let them walk. You're there for them. You say, I'm here to pick you up. I'm here to support you. But every walk has to begin with falling at least once or twice or three times. I remember reading once this, I think, a tremendous analogy. Beautiful. So we all know a caterpillar metamorphosizes into a butterfly. It's one of those fascinating things. A caterpillar that crawls on the ground or on a leaf suddenly goes into a cocoon. After a little while, it goes through that whole metamorphosis, that process. From the chrysalis emerges a butterfly. So besides the fact that it's a lesson in life, how we can grow, but it doesn't come easily. Once the cocoon begins to open up, you can see the new butterfly is struggling to get out. So someone was watching the butterfly struggle, and he was in compassion. He decided, you know what? Why should he struggle, the butterfly? He took a pair of scissors, a knife, and he cut open the cocoon to let the butterfly out because he saw it struggling. And to his chagrin, sadly, he's watching the butterfly on the branch, and the butterfly does not take flight. And then he comes to realize that he actually destroyed the butterfly's life. Because the pressure, when you struggle to get out of the cocoon, drives liquid into the wings of the butterfly that creates the aerodynamics necessary for it to fly. Because he thought he's depriving the butterfly from the struggle, the butterfly could never fly. That liquid never went into its wings, and it just remained. So in other words, sometimes the challenges of life that we think we're struggling through are actually the things that give us the strength to fly. So the greatest risk is not taking no risk at all by saying, you know what, I want to be comfortable. I don't need extra pressure. Pressure in life is critical. You don't want undue pressure. You don't want a pressure that's overwhelming. But there's nothing in life that doesn't work with that pressure. You know, as a writer, I can tell you, if I didn't have deadlines and pressures, this book would never have been published. I'd still be sitting and ruminating different options. You need to have deadlines and pressure. We hate it, but it's what makes us grow. There's an expression that olive does not produce oil until you squeeze it, until you pressure it, you crush it.
I mean, for yourself, what do you see? Like, like you say, we look through the gaze of social media, but like in your day-to-day life as well, do you see that weak society? Do you see the difference in 50, 60 years ago? Like what is the difference?
Yeah, there's a massive difference. You've got to look at the youth of today, the younger people, they don't want any kind of hardship. You know, they're again, this society that everything's, they just don't think. You go down a busy street, someone stops at the zebra crossing to cross the road, you go to London for the day or anywhere, any city. What is the first thing anyone does? They don't sit and think about their thoughts, think about that moment that they're in. They pull out the phone, they've got that distraction, they're not thinking at all. And they're just being part of the program, part of the matrix. So when I look around me, I just see a lot of weak humans that are basically there trying to put on this bravado face, trying to be the hard man. But underneath that hard shell is an extremely soft center that has no resilience whatsoever.
How do we escape the matrix?
The way we escape the matrix is by working within our 1 meter square. Cut off the outside world and focus on you. Start to become aware of the things that are going on. Start to question the narrative that is being fed and belt fed to us. Start to think for yourself. Start to put away your phone. Turn your phone off. Start to get out into the wild. Start to get out into nature and connect with yourself. Stop predicting your life with your past as a reference for that. You know, the majority of people, we don't know how to live in the now. Everyone is trying to predict the future based on a snapshot of the past. And that's basically how the brain works. What's happening is our survival instinct is being brought to the surface through the programming. And basically, there's no stronger driving force in any one of us on this planet than our need for survival. There's no stronger driving force in any animal on this planet and any plant. It's that need for survival. It's a subconscious behavior. You know, it's stronger than you having followers on Instagram. It's stronger than your KPIs at work. It's stronger than you getting a promotion. That is the strongest driving force within us all. And when you start to connect with that and understand how that system works, you can work with it instead of working against it. I used to say that man's greatest discovery is the ability to acknowledge his own dysfunction. I actually don't believe in that. I think it's a contradiction, really. At the end of the day, the dysfunction is society. You know, society is the problem. We struggle to fit into society because of the way it's built, the way it's structured. So it's not us that are at fault. It's the system that we're being trying to force or shoehorned into. But once we start to realize this, once we start to work with the pros as well as the cons and stop focusing on this fake imperfection, we'll start to become a lot stronger from within.
When you're at that stage, which you've said you were there at one point as well, where you're in the anger, even rage phase of the other side of trauma. Like, and for me, when I've been there, it's felt like I've wanted revenge, and it's been a, that almost created a fire for me. Like that was that fire energy for me that motivated me. But how do you overcome it? How do you get to the other side of that rage?
You have to, you know, I talk about the dragon, the koi fish going up to enlightenment. You know what that means? You change your life with the renewing of one's mind. It's your choice. You can continue to go and somebody says something about you and you get angry, you're drinking their poison. They're not even around you. You know, let's just say you work really hard on this project and this video and you're really proud of it, and then somebody looks at it and says, it looks like shit. They had nothing to do with it. That's their narrative. It has nothing to do with you. So the thing is, let's just say somebody insults you and you get very angry. What's that have to do with you? See, the thing is that we live life with expectations, and that's driven off of ego. You know, why ego? Let's just talk about that. If somebody insults you, why are you don't even know them? Why would you get angry? Ego. Such a powerful thing. And that's tied to hate. That's tied to greed. That's tied to all your sufferings. You must die to your ego. And it takes work. So when somebody makes you angry and you go around in your office and you're spreading your little rumors and your little narrative of what you think it is, it's not even true. But you're going around, you're spreading this. Do you feel better? You don't even feel better. You linger that on to the night because you're drinking your own poison. He's not even around. And then a week from then, you're still thinking about the same shit. So you're suffering for no reason due to your own self. You don't stop hate. right, with more hate. You change that by changing the elements. And the strongest power, look, man, I've been around the world, right? And I've been to some of the worst places. The strongest power I ever seen was love. So embrace the positive energy and don't let negative people, negative shit get in your way, because it has nothing to do with you. Control your emotions. And in doing so, you free yourself from your own sufferings.
Your kind of mentality, almost for life, is always a little further.
Yeah. That mantra, like I say, it's spooky in a way. The old man, basically I stole his hat, I was 9 years old, and he took me into a little dark room and I thought, oh shit. And he said, that's when he sat me down and he said, look, he goes, you're a bad little shit, but there's something about you. And he started talking to me and he explained what boxing was. As I said earlier, boxing is not a game of brutality. Boxing is a poor man's game of chess. It's about looking at the person in front of you or whatever's in front of you, anticipating the next move, being one step ahead of it. You win a boxing match with your feet and your brain, not with your hands. Your hands just put the final touches to it. Your feet will get you in trouble, will get you out of trouble, and your mind. So it's staying focused, reading, anticipating, and being one step ahead. And he said, it's about going always a little further. It won't be easy. It'll be hard. You can hardly breathe. Your legs are heavy. Your arms are heavy. But you can. As long as you say so, I'm going to keep my arms up. I'm going to step forward. I'm going to throw another punch. Bang, you've already gone a step further. Always a little further. And then when I joined the regiment years later, it's on our clock tower. It's part of the saying, you know, over that blue mountain, over that angry sea, always a little further. And I've always kept that in my head. And it's helped me through life. I can go a little bit further. And I'll always go a little bit further. As I get older, you know, maybe that little bit further is just getting off the couch and making a cup of tea. But I'll get up and do it. I won't just sit there and go, well, I can't have a cup of tea because I'm tired. I'll get up and do it. So, yeah.
How much do you think people are leaving in their tanks?
In where? Or how?
In life in general, I mean, a lot, you know.
50%.
Yeah.
50%. Because we, you know what it is? And there's an old saying, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I wouldn't agree with that. I fucking hate being uncomfortable. But in order to get achievements, it generally means being uncomfortable. And you've got that energy in your tank and that drive to do it. Just use it. Break through it. It doesn't matter. Like getting that water this morning, I ain't getting it, it's cold. I know it's cold. Fuck it, I'm going to get in it. Because I can. I can. And I also have a choice. I can or I can't. Like I said, there ain't no can't. I can. So I'm going to do it. And everybody's got the same, no matter what it is. You've got it in there. You have got it in you. Everybody has. There's no excuses. Whether you've got a disease, whether you've got a problem, whether you've got a mental problem, you have. You've just got to go through it. The problem with, you know, the mental problem as well is that it's real. Of course it's real. But you've got to make the first move. Because no one else knows what's inside your head. No one. You have got to say to yourself, I cannot sit in this pity party. You can sit in there and go, blame somebody else. Somebody else is going to drag me forward and do it. People will try. But you still have to make that fucking move. You still have to go forward and go, I want to get through this now, I'm going to go. So everybody, that's what you got to go. You got to say, this is not comfortable. I've got to get through it. And it's a passage in time. It's like anything, you know, we've all been through that roller coaster of, oh, I've got a load of money now. Now I've got nothing. Now I've got a bit of money. Now I've got nothing. Now I'm feeling fit. Now I ain't fit. Now I'm in a great relationship. Now everybody hates me. It's a passage in time. It'll keep coming and keep going. But you've got to make the first move. Get out the pity party, because the only one in the pity party is you, and go forward. Take that fucking bite and go, fuck it. And it ain't going to be easy. And it's going to be painful, but it's going to be worth it.
How can somebody edit negative thoughts, and why should they?
Editing negative thoughts is important because your thoughts are not your own. They're downloaded from someplace and they're reinforced by emotional feelings. And then you project that out and you get the same thing back. You get you attract those negative thoughts, you reinvent those negative feelings, you put that out and you get more back. And if you can edit those negative thoughts and recreate that positive feeling, And it really takes practice. First off, you have to recognize that you have negative thoughts in your head. And I do that with kumihimo, braiding, thinking about it and not thinking about it. And if I'm doing something down here and there's negative thoughts going through my head, then what is it that, where is that coming from? You know, what somebody else thinks of me. Where is that coming from? It's not coming from the braiding part. It's coming from a unconscious part of me. And because I understand that I'm whole, perfect, and complete as I am, that negative thought must be foreign. So you just edit it. You just say, thank you for sharing, and you go on. And I encourage people to walk 20 minutes a day. And if you're out in nature and you're in a beautiful space, what is your thinking doing? Are you thinking about yesterday or tomorrow? That's depression, that's anxiety. You're in a space right now where you should be in the moment. What is going on? And paying attention to where your thoughts are and trying to redirect them into the moment. That's that 20 minutes, because if your body is working in a rhythmic, reciprocal pattern, you're not thinking about making your body work. That's automatic. And if you've got automatic thinking going through, then you have a chance to observe that and change it. And so I always say 20 minutes a day, whether you want to or not. Or meditation helps, because you sit there and you're actually looking at what that thought is. You're getting, closing your eyes, looking and quieting your mind. And then every little thought that comes back is a gift. Everyone that comes across is a gift, because it tells you what's dominating your mind. And you say, thank you. And then if those are thoughts that don't serve you, you just say thank you and you release it. And the other one is play. If you're engaged in play, or if you're engaged in that space where you're observing the world and you're involved with those form, shape comparisons, and you have a negative thought, where'd that come from? It's not constructive. So you just have to release it. And when I have a chance to program my mind, to program my thinking, I always tell people, brush your teeth and make your bed. So you have a place to go back to that's organized. And at night, you sit and say, I did a good job here. I fell a little short on my goals here. I'm going to look at the way I do things tomorrow. When I wake up in the morning and my body tells me it's awake, I start saying, what are my goals and dreams for today? And how am I going to embody that which brings me joy each day? And if I didn't love my work, I wouldn't do it. And so I get to go out and do what fills me up every day. And that's the way I say, Witch, you're doing a good job. You know, it's like, get out there and have fun.
This is the great thing about the channel, is we can have somebody like Master Shahong Yi on the channel, and then somebody like Olli Olleson, both from two completely different backgrounds, but their philosophies merge in a really, really interesting way. And there's a lot of overlap. And that's why for me, I will take from everybody. There isn't anybody I wouldn't listen to. There is this idea that you cannot learn something from everyone. I think that is a you issue. It's not a them issue. Not everybody is there to outwardly teach, but everybody has a lesson to teach. It's whether you're able to receive it and hear and listen to the lesson. Sometimes people who are failures or failed in something in life, they have the best lessons. But so many of us avoid those people because we feel that they don't know how to teach us. We feel that it's the successful we have to listen to, or the person in our field that we have to listen to. And whilst that might be true for some occasions, something that Master Shahong Yi taught me is that sometimes the thing that you are looking for is actually in the other direction. And it's so often true. You know, you find the lesson where you are least likely to look for it. If you're trying to become successful in business, sometimes it's not about looking towards the success of people and the really impressive billionaires and entrepreneurs out there. Sometimes the lessons might lie in the person who failed multiple businesses over and over and over again. We don't receive lessons as well as we could do. And for me, that's why the Inspire Change mission has always been to interview as many different stories as possible, because so many different people have lessons to teach you. Not just these people who we're presenting with you. It could be your neighbor. It could be the man across the street. It could be the bus driver, whoever it is. Really, you know, it's down to us to listen appropriately when we think there might be something to be learned. So yeah, I'm so excited to deliver some more. So on to the next one.
How would you describe sports psychology to somebody who's never heard of it before?
Well, it's about maximizing on yourself. It's about dealing with your own doubts, fears, and anxieties, about letting the positive you defeat the negative you. Because really, psychology is a battle of you versus you. We think the opposition's over there in the other dressing room, but actually it's in here. Who am I going to be today? Am I going to be my best self or my weaker self? So a lot of my psychology with teams and athletes and coaches comes down to fighter versus victim. We have a choice. There's a good story. Clint Eastwood was playing golf. And his partner, this last year, his partner said, "Clint, how old are you?" He said, 88. He said, 88 on Monday. And his partner said, "Wow, that's wonderful. What are you doing?" He said, "I'm starting a new movie." He said, "How do you do it?" He said, "I wake up every morning and don't let the old man in." And that's life. We wake up every morning and make a decision who we're going to be. I've got Parkinson's disease. So getting up in the morning is not so easy for me. Getting dressed is not so easy. I have to make a decision. Am I going to be a fighter today, or am I going to be a victim? And that's what fascinates me with sports psychology. And I suppose, in a nutshell, sports psychology is deciding whether you're going to be a fighter or a victim.
That's so applicable as well to everybody in life. Like you say, like, yours isn't based on sports. So, like, in terms of other people waking up each morning and deciding, you know, how they're going to be, are they, it's going to be a positive outlook or a negative outlook, is that something, can we take those lessons and apply them to our lives?
Absolutely. My latest book takes 20 lessons from sport, where I've dealt with somebody in sport, some quite famous athletes, whether they've got a mental and emotional problem getting in the way of their performance. And I explain how together we dealt with it, overcame it, and they went on to become what they were capable of. But then I draw it parallels to everybody. I mean, in a sense, we're all high performers. We all step up every day to earn a living, to maintain relationships, to take the responsibility of owning property, to raise children. We're all high performers. So the lessons of my high performance in sport carry across into life.
Is there anything in particular when you were seeing athletes that you would draw a commonality, like there was something in common with the athletes that was stopping them from performing or issues that they were having?
I tend to ask athletes three questions when they come to see me. And I've had a lot of distinguished athletes come to see me over the years. And my three questions are, what do you want? How badly do you want it? And how much are you willing to suffer? And very often, everything revolves around the first question, what do you want? Because a lot of people are unclear what they want from life. They don't sit down and think through. We are writing our own life story every day, and yet we don't think about it. Who do we want to be? Where do we want to live?
What life do we want to lead? When we've finished our life, come to the end of our life and look back, what do we want to say that we've done? So what do you want is a very powerful question. And then if an athlete says, I want to be the best, Bill, fine. How badly do you want it? Because it's going to, you've got to pay a price to be the best. The best pay a big price. You've got to work harder. You've got to commit more. You've got to take more responsibility. You've got to deal with more ups and downs. And if this, if we can deal with that question, how much are you willing to suffer? Because I work with gold medal champions and they suffer every day. They work enormously hard. They sacrifice enormous things in order to get that success.
In terms of the healthiness of your relationship, you know, you've spoken about how it is different. What are the key differences with your relationship currently?
Two of us being on a healing journey, individually and separate from each other before we met. I was really wanting to heal whatever traumas I kept recreating in past relationships before entering a new relationship. And my vision was to meet someone who was also in a healing journey and taking full responsibility for their life, their actions, and their emotions. Because for whatever reason, I'd chosen certain people in the past who weren't willing to do all that work. And it doesn't make them wrong or bad. It's just I chose based out of a wound, not based out of a vision. And so when you choose based out of a wound, or you choose for what that's not based out of a vision, it doesn't always work the way you want. And so this was about creating an intentional vision of a relationship that I wanted to create. And I knew I wanted the relationship to have three key things where we shared values, shared vision, and shared a lifestyle that was in alignment for both of us. Because I think if those three things are off, it's just going to make it more challenging. It doesn't mean it can't work. I'm just trying to eliminate as much friction in my life and have more peace and harmony. So I knew that those three things needed to be key: aligned values, aligned vision, and aligned lifestyle. With that, when I entered the relationship with Martha, I made a request. I said, listen, I've always wanted to enter a relationship in therapy together when everything's great, but no one's been willing to do that. Are you willing to do that? And she was like, 100%, let's do it. She'd never done that either. So after the dating process of many months and we got it committed, we started therapy. And it has been the best thing that I've ever done for my life, because there probably wouldn't have been, like, you know, too many challenges in the honeymoon phase of any relationship. Everything is perfect, usually, right? In the first 6 months, you're just having fun. There's chemicals, there's chemistry, you know, all this stuff feels good. But for whatever reason in my past, things always got worse around a year, 2 years, right? And because we never really addressed the things that we needed to address. And so we got into it early, and it allowed us both to create agreements, to learn each other's communication style, and to diffuse anything that could have been bigger, you know, pretty quickly. Any little, like, frustrations, we were able to communicate about it, create agreements and alignment around it, and have harmony. So it's been this beautiful, peaceful experience. And again, no relationship is perfect or whatever, but I've never had this much peace in a relationship. And so going into it with a vision of what I want my relationship to look like, creating, you know, finding a partner who has those three things in alignment, values, vision, and lifestyle, and then agreeing to start in therapy. It may seem like a lot for people to be like, man, that's a lot of work, or starting in therapy, why would you do that if something's not wrong? Again, I'm doing it because I don't want things to get wrong. I'm doing it to make sure, are we in the right place? Should we continue, or should we exit early in this relationship before going 2 to 3 years? Maybe we're not in alignment. So let's figure it out sooner than later and either move forward or move on. And so that has created a great harmony in the relationship. And I want to keep doing therapy because it continues to work. So I don't want to stop. I don't want to wait till something gets bad. It's like, why play a sport and not have a coach? Why get into a relationship and think you can win on your own? I don't know.
No, I love it. I love it. I think the practicality of that would scare people. Like it would scare people. I think
I never would have thought about doing that in my 20s or early 30s. I'd be like, no, I don't need that. What's wrong with you?
It's funny. My girlfriend said to me at the start of our relationship, she said, love is not enough.
It isn't.
And I remember it hurt me. I was like, of course love is enough. Like, love fixes everything. It'd be fine. But then we started to talk more about the practicalities of it. Yeah. And I think people do forget about the practicalities of it. They forget where people align. And you can have, like you say, those 6 months to a year, like you've got that those feelings of love. They come up, of course you're going to love each other and you do anything for each other. But when it doesn't align and, two or three years down the line, could be huge issues.
Yeah, and if you have different values, I was talking to someone recently who's in a relationship with someone for 2 years, and I go, you think you get married in the future? And she was like, well, he needs to convert religions because I'm not going to marry him unless he changes religion. Well, I go, well, then your values are off. And so you're with someone wanting their values to change. They're not changing. So why are you together? Either you got to accept the values that this person has and be okay with it or move on. You know, you've got to stress and struggle. That's fine if that's what you want, but it's not creating harmony and peace. You're creating disconnection, dis-ease rather than ease. And I'm not trying to struggle in my relationship. We have big missions in the world. There's already going to be challenges in the world to face. I don't want to come home and stress and struggle as well. So I'm just trying to create as much harmony as possible. I know there's going to be challenges that we're going to need to face in a relationship, but I don't want it to be more challenges than necessary by having alignment of values, vision, and lifestyle.
I think there was this quote that I wrote down that you'd said, I think it was in the Jay Shetty podcast. It was, you can't buy peace, you must be peace. Yes. I'd love to finish on that note because it really resonated with me at the time.
Yeah, I think I learned this in the last 3 years when I was doing healing from a previous relationship. Because I said the first day I met with the therapist, she was like, what do you want? And I said, well, I want peace, clarity, and freedom. And everything that I was doing in that previous relationship and really my entire history of relationships, I would do things to buy peace. I would give up who I was to make someone else happy. I would not create a boundary in order for someone to feel better. I would people please. I would do things to buy peace for a short period of time. And my therapist was like, you can't buy peace. Like, it's momentarily, but you're going to resent yourself. You're going to resent the relationship. You have to be peace. You have to be harmony and peace within you when there's chaos around you. And you got to be willing to create boundaries, and not your relationship or other people in life aren't always going to like the boundaries you create. You know, I had partners that would kind of kick and scream and, you know, yell and give the silent treatment if I didn't do what they wanted me to do. And so I would change who I was over and over again to make them happy. I would try to buy peace. And it never worked because they were never happy. So I'd keep changing more and more of my personality, more and more of my things in life to make them feel better and better. But they were never better. And then I felt drained and exhausted. So I tried to buy peace and I lost. And I was bankrupt. I had no peace. So instead I had to rebuild it and I had to become peace. I had to set clear vision for the relationship. I had to say, here are my values. Here's my lifestyle. Here's the relationship I want to build together with you. Are you in alignment? And if they weren't in alignment, then I need to say, well, it's unfortunate because love is not enough. And it's not going to work out for us. You're going to be unhappy and I'm going to be happy. Love is not enough. We need to have these other things. I want you to love the relationship. That means you've got to accept me and I've got to accept you. But if you can't accept me constantly for the things that I do or the things that I am, and I need to change to make you happy, that's not love. That's not peaceful. That's me needing to please you all the time. And it doesn't work for me and it doesn't work for you. So when I learned that and I created harmony within me, and you really learn being peace through healing. Because as a recovering people pleaser, I would do it out of a wound. I'd try to please everyone out of a wound to be liked because I never felt like anyone liked me. So I had to learn how to like the child within me, the 5, 8, 12-year-old within me who didn't have friends. I had to recreate a relationship with the inner younger me, which sounds weird. But just like you said, you've got to connect the dots to the past and create harmony from the past. And if we can go into the future and create harmony from the future to the now, we can create an incredible life. But we cannot buy peace. We must be peace.
Spreading the message that I want to spread is so crucial to me. So when my son died, I sold my business at the time and quit everything. And my brother at the time was doing Mulligan Brothers, and he was creating like compilation videos of like different motivational speakers. And I saw the work that he was doing. I thought it was incredible. He had 14,000 followers. And to me, I was like, that in a stadium is just such a huge audience. You know, 8 years ago on YouTube, it was quite a big audience. And I was like, look, you don't need to pay me any money, but just the videos that I make, if you give me the revenue from those videos, I'll try and live off it. And I remember the first month was like $80 paycheck. I was buzzing. Like, I'd sold my business, I'd quit my job, and it got $80 in the bank. And I was like, oh my God, if this scales up, this could work. Like in my head, I was like, this could work. But the reason that it meant so much to me is because I knew that he was doing positive work. It was mm-hmm. helping people. People were being inspired by it. So then when my son died, it kind of attached. I quit everything to go and help people and to spread that message.
You talk about your son. What was his name?
Jacob. So I got a title on my hand. So for Jacob, so Inspire Change is the mission. And for Jacob is... It was the power behind everything. And I think it's, I don't know. That's the part maybe I need to process, because a lot of it was through the pain of losing him. I was like, it was such a powerful force that I wanted him to live on through what I did. You know, I don't want his death to be in vain. That's, for me, that was, you know, what I would say. I don't want him to die in vain. I want it to have impacted as many people's lives as possible. But yeah, I don't know if that's, I still don't know if that's the right way to go with it. I'm not too sure. What's your thoughts on that? Like through loss, I mean, that's where I do a lot of my work from, is through loss. Mm-hmm. Can that be a positive impact for the world?
Absolutely. I think it's the only place you really make the greatest impact. Otherwise, you can't really resonate with other people. And if you stay in your pain, you cannot help other people.
I think that's the key, yeah.
But if you can actually find the strength in that pain, you become an incredible source for other people, because then it means that that pain is surmountable. That, you know, you can overcome that. You can find a way through it. And I think sometimes it's almost like your soul will lie to you, or your brain will lie to you and tell you that if you let go of the pain, you've let go of the love.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
And so what you have to begin to hear in your inner soul is the love you have for Jacob is actually found in your healing, not in the pain.
I said this to Lewis yesterday. When I started therapy, the first thing I said to her is, I don't want you to heal that. I don't want you to take that away from me. It's too much power. Like, I don't want you to take it away from me. The pain that I feel for him is because I loved him so much. And that's why I'll never let go of it. And I think there's something still not clicking for me. There's still something there.
And I don't want to risk disagreeing with you, but the pain you're feeling is not because you love him so much. And the pain you're feeling is because you can't give yourself permission to move on.
Mm.
Because then you feel like you've left him behind. And so your pain is the anchor that holds you in the past, because you're afraid that if you leave the past, you've left him, because he, in your mind, only exists in the past. But that's a lie. He'll always exist, because you'll always carry him in your heart. So he doesn't just exist in your past. He exists in your future. In your pain, he only exists in your past. In your hope, he exists in the future. So why leave him trapped in the past with you?
I think the letting go, I just don't know how to do it. I think that's the thing, I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to let go.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to let go of him.
I don't have to let go of the pain. I just, yeah, it's different. Like, I really don't know. Like,
yeah, you have to separate him. He is not the pain. He is the love.
How? Sorry, I don't want this to go into a thing. Like, I don't know how. I really don't know how.
Why? This is what matters.
It served me to sit in that pain so much. Like, I think it's
the only place you know to meet him.
Yeah, I go to that. That's the thing. Is like I spoke to Neve about this. Like, I'll go to his grave, and there's almost a joy in the fact that I'm sat there crying and feeling that pain and just sat this. Just
but I want you to start to meet him in a different place.
Mm.
I want you to start taking 15-minute walks filled with gratitude and hope and joy and laughter and meet him there. Create a new space, a new place for him to stay with you. And as you create that new place, you'll stop visiting the old place so much because you'll know he'll meet you here. And little by little, you're going to be able to give that other place away.
Okay, I mean, that clicks for me. I hear that, find a new place for him. That helps me a lot because it's very physical. It's actually a location where it's his graveside. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'll go and sit. And it's very specific to me. I almost like think that's like, I almost say that's the center of my universe is his graveside.
Do you surf?
I don't know. No.
What do you do for pleasure?
Lift heavy things. I power lift, strongman. I started recently running and obsessively running miles, tennis, sports, anything. Yeah any kind
so
of
so take him running with you.
Yeah, running would be, yeah,
take him running with you when you run. Say, hey, we're gonna run together.
I run and I lift in a very similar kind of manner though. I'll do it till it hurts me. Like I do, and I purposely do that. And I don't know, maybe that's unhealthy as well. It's quite masochistic the way I'll train and lift and stuff.
That's okay, because your greatness is on the other side of your pain.
Yeah.
And so the fact that, you know, you push yourself towards painful actually just means that you have a psychological disposition to always change the boundaries of your limitation. That's not necessarily self-destructive, you know.
Mm.
And
from one masochist to the other masochist.
That feels reassuring, for sure.
Yeah.
But
how long ago was it?
7 years ago. Yeah, coming up to eight, yeah. And it's like, it's birthed so much greatness, you know, goodness, you know. It's funny because I feel there's something missing. I don't know if that's it. I hope it is. I don't know. I don't want to put
I want you to text us when you've created that new place and he's more comfortable there than the other place.
Do you think I need a physical place? Like, I've had such a physical place for it.
I think that's why I was asking if you're surfing, because I thought maybe you could create, you can find the ocean or someplace. You know, you need a place that's filled with joy, because you have a physical place right now. So you're going to have to create a new space.
A new physical place,
And then, but the real place is in your memory. Yeah, that's the place you actually need to create, but you might need the physical space to get there.
Pull away from it maybe at the start, yeah. You know, we just said before this as well, like all of this happened last minute. Like, I can't tell you how much, like, that's not something I've heard before or felt before. Like, the shift, there's quite a large shift for me, right?
I promise you, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And if you'll trust me a little bit, we can reconstruct your inner world and help you find the joy that you need and the release from that pain.
I appreciate that so much. Like, I honestly can tell you this, like, I've attacked it, like, probably the wrong word, but I really have attacked trying to fix it. Like, I have, through therapy, through speaking to other people, but nothing's kind of like hit me like that before. So
thank you for sharing.
No.
Yeah, what a gift you've given us to allow us to be part of your life.
Thank you so much to listen to some of our most amazing guests. This year, we have over 100 new episodes coming to the channel, which means there's going to be a ton more guests coming. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, hit the notification bell and the subscription button. And today's video was sponsored by Huel. They've just delivered me their new product, the Daily Greens. This thing is absolutely delicious. And to know that I can have all of this in 10 seconds of a shake is unbelievable. So if you want to find out more, head to the link in the description. Get your health on down below. Thank you for watching. Have a blessed and productive day, and let's absolutely execute in 2024. I'll see you in the next one.
Peace.